Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Our Pop Life Podcast today is July 8th.
Nigga.
Was it 10?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, hey. How's everybody doing?
I'm still tired.
From New Orleans?
I guess. I don't know, from something.
How was your flight back? Did you have issues? You just came back.
It was long. I had a connecting flight, so it was a long day.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I connected through Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I came right back, but I didn't, my plane didn't leave till 4:30, but I actually got to the airport like dumb early because, you know, I had to check out and I didn't know where to go.
You got to the airport before me. That was interesting because your checkout must have been early. My checkout was at noon and I kind of hung out in the lobby, like answering some emails for about 30 minutes before I headed to the airport. But you were at the airport before I had even left my damn hotel.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I left.
And my flight was at 3:30.
Yeah, I left mad early. I got to the airport at like, I probably got to the airport like around 12 or so. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I didn't have nowhere to go. I was up. And I was like, God, let me just go. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I just kind of hung out in the airport for like 4 hours and, you know, watched the people and shit. And, you know, tried to take a little nap in the nasty ass chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of which, man, like, you know, listen, man, New Orleans does a lot of things well.
Mm-hmm.
But my
the nigga, airport is terrible.
It's garbage.
Even the Delta Lounge is terrible in the airport.
Like y'all really like guys, it's a little time. It's time to step up. Okay, the lounge situation is a little suspect.
Yeah,
food options are very, very suspect.
Wow,
it's an international airport. It's not like it's not.
It really feels like a regional airport.
That's not. It does. Yes, it feels like absolutely it does. And I was bugging because we got to the airport fairly early. We had about 90 minutes before we boarded because we kind of breezed through. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, well, where's the United Lounge?
Ain't none.
None.
Ain't none. None. The United Lounge is the nasty ass chairs.
No, I was kind of surprised, very surprised.
Yeah. Well, the Uber driver told me that they're actually building a new airport. Right there. He showed it to me when we were pulling in. It's like he said they're building it. So he said it's supposed to be done by. He said it was supposed to be done by 18.
Yeah, I think I saw it supposed to be done by next year.
Yeah. Now it's pushed. Really? I was pushed to next year, and he said it's supposed to be high tech and all that shit. So. We'll see, because right now that shit's like flying into Des Moines, Iowa or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we're going to get to the whole Essence thing a little later, because we got a lot to discuss with that. All three of us were down there. Even though we all three didn't hook up.
Like, I saw Sean from, like, a distance.
Yeah, I saw Naima
for once. Like, passing, yeah.
In fact, literally, like, 10 seconds we talked.
Yeah,
but, you know, we'll get to that. So, like, let's just jump into a couple quick things because Sean's got to jump, so we don't want to waste a lot of time. I wanted to give a quick light shout-out to women's sports, which is popping right now. So Coco Gauff, who's a black 15-year-old tennis player from Florida. I don't know if she's from Florida originally, but most tennis players call Florida their residence because that's where all the training facilities are and the weather and stuff. So they all end up moving down there. Who made it to the, I think it was like the semifinals of Wimbledon. Obviously had all the black people rooting for her. A couple of big upsets. And, you know, she plays with a lot of spirit and she's got a bad heart. She's a little on the small side. She's only 15, so hopefully she'll grow a little bigger. But right now she's a little on the small side.
You think?
Because what's she like? She like about like 5'8" or so, 5'7", 5'8"?
You know what? I gotta check the stats because I saw the footage of her. She looked a little. She looked very tall and lean.
She didn't look too much shorter than Venus.
Venus. I was gonna say She looks physically. She appears to be more like Venus.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe I'm mistaken on her size, but she did well for 15. Obviously, for a 15-year-old in her first.
Well, let me say this: the Williams sisters. And a couple of other players staying in the game so long have given us a skewed perception about the average age of tennis pros.
Very true.
A lot of pros won their first pros when they were in their teens.
True. And that's
why they were like, oh, she's 15, she's so young. But in actuality, like, not really.
In tennis, it's not really like that. Yeah. And
she's prime.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, she beat Venus. Venus is, you know, she's iconic. We already know what that is. But, like, Venus is 40, which in tennis is, like,
170.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. It's like she's kind of supposed to beat Venus. And Venus obviously has had a lot of physical ailments over the past few years. So she's not the Venus of, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And I don't want to diminish anything that Coco's done, but I was just kind of like, she's beating, like, it was like the dudes who beat Muhammad Ali late. It's like, that is not really the same guy as he was, but, you know, the name is there, so you take it. But regardless, I'm happy, you know, that she made it. Then I also want to give a shout out to the women's soccer, the U.S. women's soccer team, who won the World Cup 2-0, and it seemed to be, like, you know, having a fucking blast, you know, partying in the locker room, they twerking, they playing nothing but hardcore, they playing, like, hardcore rap shit. Like Nipsey Hussle, and, you know what I'm saying? Like they
were the co-captain of the team who's been in the news.
Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah, Megan actually used the Nipsey quote when she posted about their win.
Yeah.
She's a real chick, but yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to give them, you know, a quick shout out for doing that. They had the parade in New York. I actually think it just ended a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
The ticker tape part, I guess they're speaking now. But
and Donald Trump has not invited them to the White House, but it's okay because all of them say they wouldn't go if he
did. Exactly. Megan Rapinoe said straight up, I'm not going to the fucking White House.
Right. But she said the rest of them have said the same.
Yeah. So whatever. Fuck that dude. You know what I'm saying? Then just another quick sports shout out. Just all the trades that have been happening in the NBA. Kawhi Leonard has gone to the Los Angeles Clippers with Paul George. Russell Westbrook is right now on the trade block. Early signs look like it might be Miami, but we'll see where he goes. The NBA is just it's a totally different league right now than it was a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's wide open. Like there's no clear cut, especially with Golden State, you know, with Durant leaving to go to Brooklyn with Kyrie. And Klay Thompson's out for the year with his injury, well, for most of the year anyway. He should probably come back like March or so, February, March. There's no clear cut like, oh, these guys are definitely winning it. It's like it's like literally six or seven teams that right now have all about the same shot to get there. So this next season is going to be, and it's the trade thing is not over. It's still shit moving. So we don't even know what teams are going to look like at the top of the season. So NBA is buck wild. They've really kind of taken a lot of the early steam off of the NFL. Now, when the NFL starts, they're going to be the NFL. Like, you know, we know what that means. But, like, the early, you know, usually right now it's all about the NFL and training camp. And it's really just still been all about the NBA, like, leading probably right up until the first preseason game of the NFL. Like, the NBA has really extended the life of their season in ways that people probably never thought they could, you know, like it's incredible. So I just wanted to say that. Y'all got any shout outs?
Not me.
I don't think so.
Y'all niggas is like, I ain't gonna say.
If I do, I don't remember.
All right, cool. So let's jump on into it. First thing I want to mention. Oh, I got to mention. So I don't know if y'all saw it, but like Pose last night
was great.
Whoa, that shit was Emmy. They got to get Emmys for this episode. Did you see it, bro?
No.
Okay. No, it was incredible. They actually killed off one of the characters, not a main character, but like a supporting character. A character who's involved with the show. We definitely all knew who she was for sure. But the way they did the send off was incredible. Like they basically, like, you know, came to the funeral and then the character who was dead was having dialogue with each of the main cast members about, you know, their relationship and what she expected from them and, you know, their feelings about her. And it was just fucking incredible, really intense, really emotional. And I thought it was interesting now that the only one they didn't do was Elektra.
Oh, you know what? I hadn't even peeped that.
Yeah, they didn't do Elektra, who was her house mother. Like, that, you know, but I don't know.
I didn't even peep that.
Yeah. So I read, I was reading this morning up on it, and the woman who plays Candy, I think her name is Angelica, said that she went to, what's his name, Ryan Murphy, and when this script came in, and told him she didn't want to do any rehearsals. The dialogue. So each dialogue that we saw last night were all first takes.
That's dope.
Yeah, they were all first takes. They were pure, they were raw and really emotional. And I think she was kind of, you know, like ad-libbing a little bit in there too to kind of get to kind of keep it going. But it was really, it was great. I think the woman who plays Candy should get a nomination. She was fucking amazing.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, Billy Porter crushed it. And oh, and sidebar, I met Angel at Essence.
Mm-hmm. She was there, and a lot of the postcast was there, because also the guy who plays Damien.
I saw him. He walked past.
I saw him at the Spotify House on Saturday, and somebody else from Essence was at the Spotify House on Saturday. But they did a conversation, and I want to call her by her name, and it's not coming to me by right now. But the actress,
I think it's India.
Yeah, India Moore.
Yeah.
They did. Essence did a conversation with India Moore, and it is the first time Essence has had, you know, an openly trans person on any of their stages and conversation like that. Because Frida's not considered trans.
Oh, she's not.
No, I don't believe so. Because I think Frida switches back and forth between, because Frida also presents as a man sometimes still.
Oh.
And it's like how RuPaul isn't considered trans. RuPaul is a drag queen.
Okay.
So anyway, I saw some people talking about it, because I saw one person especially say her first trip to Essence, she was really disappointed at how it wasn't queer friendly at all.
Mm.
So to see them having these conversations, it's kind of like what we were saying about BET, like that absence was really striking.
Yeah.
To see Essence, you know, having, you know, giving the community a platform was really encouraging. And I applaud them for that.
Especially because there are a lot of, you know, gay, lesbians and trans people at the festival.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being participants and going to the shows, like, they're there. So it's like, why don't you just, that's right in front of you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might as well, you know, kind of do something to cater to that community as well. They're paying their money shit like everybody else is, you know? It's like they're not around. So, but anyway, yeah, she was really nice. I mean, we just talked, it was very, very brief, you know what I'm saying? But she was very nice, very sweet, kind of shy. Kind of, you know, just, you know, and she was low, like it was her and just two other people, just wasn't like in a big squad of people, it was just like kind of, and they looked like they were like more like her friends than her glam squad or whatever. I'm sure they helped out with stuff, but like, plus she's like, she wasn't really glammed up when I saw her. She was kind of chilling. Like, if you didn't kind of look, you would have just, wouldn't even have paid attention, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, so whatever. Yeah, but I just wanted to say that. But yeah, Pose last night was just fucking awesome, man. Like,
this has been a really powerful year, and again, I applaud them for really bringing these very important conversations to screen.
Yeah, and it's only what, episode like just like five,
four or five. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's still like a long part of the season to go. I know I'm only on episode two because I just kind of got left behind, but I want to catch up. Now, I know you wanted to talk about Euphoria. Yeah.
Oh, Euphoria, it's been very buzzy and trendy on social media. Yep. It is a really powerful show starring Zendaya. It's kind of like, I don't even know if y'all would have watched this, but I know a lot of Black Gen Xers watched My So-Called Life with Claire
Danes. Yeah, I watched it. I loved that show.
So it's like a really dark a darker, more twisted version of my so-called life. It's
yeah,
like
my so-called life was on ABC, so they could only go but so far. But they pushed the boundary still. But yeah, but it was prime time, so on HBO, obviously, Euphoria can go much further.
So it's like an updated version of my so-called life on steroids, and basically, it kind of is like about the secret, not so secret, like torment and turmoil that goes along with like high school life. Their sexual experiences, their struggles with identity, their struggles with drugs and substance abuse, their struggles with belonging and acceptance.
Their parents.
And we see it all. We watch it all through the lens of Zendaya's character, who is an addict.
Yeah. And her name is Rue, right? Rue is her name on the show.
And has been... Through, who had just gotten out of rehab at the end of this summer, at the end of the summer before the school year that we're presently watching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really gripping, and it's also very disturbing.
It's wild disturbing.
Yeah, it's very disturbing, and it's like, I can't even trip too much, because I think millennials find it really, really like bugged out, but Gen Xers, We actually had kind of like high school related content that wasn't that far from this. Like if you think of Less Than Zero, if you think of like stuff like that, like our generation saw content that reflected teenagers in like these really super adult situations.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, I'm kind of like, yo, I remember.
You know what I think the difference is? First of all, I agree with you. Right. I think the difference is with this show and some of the shows that we had that you had that type of content is they were, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, I felt like a lot of them were always skewed in, like, the rich kids was doing that shit.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like Less Than Zero, they was like, they're my mom and dad aren't around, so let's just go crazy. It was a lot. Even those John Hughes movies, it's always like, our parents aren't around, let's go crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Rich privilege.
Exactly, very privileged. But with this, it's like, these are, nobody's rich. Everybody's, like, lower middle class is kind of like the highest it goes, and then there's like kind of like below that. So like it's not about wealth and access. It's just about what's happening, like you said, in the average kid's life. I think that's kind of the difference. But like you said, it was a lot of the shit that was going on then is going on now. It's different drugs,
right?
It's different music.
And but also the incorporation of the internet.
Yes, of course.
And digital, it plays a really, really big part here as
huge,
well.
Huge.
And there also is a trans high school girl here. It's her first acting job ever.
Who I didn't know was trans. In the first episode, I didn't know that was a trans girl.
I didn't realize she was trans. Even watching everything with dude in the hotel and everything, I didn't get that she was trans until I think like the second episode.
Yeah, then I was like, after the thing, I was like reading on Twitter or whatever, and then the people say, I was like, wait, what? Who are they talking about? Like, I really just thought that, you see, even in the hotel thing, it was just like, she was just kind of like turning a trick. I didn't get what was quite going on.
It was some kind of like a risque meetup, but I thought it was more about her pretending older, that she was older than she was.
That's exactly what I thought, that she was just like pretending to be a little older and just kind of doing some nasty shit, whatever.
Yeah, even when homeboy was like, we all know what you are, I was like, that shit totally went over.
Yeah, because he was like, you walk around like this, and I was like, what is, I thought he meant like you wear makeup and stuff, you dress older. But like you said, it's a really, like after episode one is very brutal and hard to watch. And you know, the stuff that goes on, I'm only at episode two, and there's stuff that goes on there, and I'm sure it goes on in the other ones as well. But now in episode two, I do like the fact that they're starting to like peel back the layers on the characters.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to learn who they are.
They focus a little bit more on each character.
Exactly.
So there's already kind of a couple of theories floating around about the show. You're only on episode two, so I won't share it with you just yet.
Okay.
One thing I do want to say is like a lot of people have been focused on Drake being attached to the show, and it's true.
He's like an executive producer or something.
Yeah,
like.
He and Future the Prince are executive producers, but they're not super involved creatively.
Yeah.
Sam Levinson, Barry Levinson's son, is the creator writer.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Whatever he's and he is loosely based on his own like being a rich Hollywood kid, his like he was an addict in high school.
Oh.
It's kind of based on like his high school life, but he has just praised Zendaya. Like Zendaya is outstanding in this.
No, she's definitely getting the Emmy nom, if not winning.
Murdering it. Like,
and by the way, is that girl really her sister? Because if not, that casting is crazy. Because they look just alike.
They do look very similar. That's the girl who was in A Wrinkle in Time. I did not think they're actually sisters, though. But they're both, like, biracial kids.
Oh, shit. I didn't realize. I never saw A Wrinkle in Time, but I didn't realize that was that, that was. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. No, it's like I said, I mean, now in episode two, like, I was like, oh, now I'm starting to see, like, oh, why that football dude is like this and why,
right.
You know, there was another character they kind of talked a little more about. But I guess I was like, yeah, now I'm getting to kind of get the gist of, or I saw, like, the kid who's her best buddy, who's the drug dealer.
Yeah, I love him.
She goes to his house, and now you see, like, how he's getting the access to the drugs, because his mom or grandmother is, like, in a hospital bed in the house. Right. So that's why he's got the prescriptions. Like, so now it's like, oh, that's how he, you know. But anyway, yes, so, yes, I know you wanted to talk about that, but we'll keep talking about it as the season goes. I think they're up to, like, episode 4 or 5 now, too. So we'll kind of keep
checking. I mean, it's a really powerful show. It's definitely one of those, like have a fucking dialogue with your kids if you're watching this shit type, you know, show. Because I saw some people saying, this is extreme. These kids aren't doing this in high school. And I saw somebody, I knew somebody who was a heroin addict in middle school. You know, so it's like,
I'm not making a shit up out of thin air, B. Stop. Yeah. Not saying every kid in high school is this, but you're lying to yourself. You think that, you know, there aren't kids dealing with this stuff or going through this shit. You're tripping.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit quick about The Little Mermaid. So Disney's doing a live, like we've said on this show a few times, Disney's doing live action movies of pretty much all their classics. Right now, Lion King comes next weekend. Did the premiere for that last night. Early reviews are amazing. They're saying that shit is fucking awesome.
The trailer looks really powerful.
The long trailer looks crazy. And I thought it was very interesting that even in the long trailers, like, they never showed Beyonce. They never showed the Nyla character talking or doing much.
They did.
They
showed her talking to Simba about...
Oh, I missed it then.
They did a quick shot of Beyonce. Well, the one I saw, we might have seen different trailers. The one I saw...
Yeah, there were multiple trailers out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sorry that I missed it. But apparently the movie's great.
Also, let me interrupt and say to that point, I think it's important, and I said this on Twitter, you know, especially from our vantage point on Twitter, everybody's like, Beyonce, 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 but this whole entire ensemble cast is out.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. I'm
Chiwetel Ejiofor, Scar.
Yeah.
It's
Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen are Timon and Pumbaa.
Which is perfect.
And John Oliver is the bird. I can't remember the bird's name now.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Zaza.
Just,
I think Zaza.
Zaza. His name is Zaza. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, and of course, James Earl reprising his role.
Angela Wimbush.
It's just really, it's an outstanding ensemble cast. And Beyonce and Donald
Glover,
are just part of that, you know?
Yeah. I'm definitely gonna go see that next weekend.
And he dropped an original song from the soundtrack last night. I didn't listen to it.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it either. And then the next one coming up is Mulan. They're working on that. I saw a trailer for that the day or so ago.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it looked like it's gonna be dope too.
Right. And then we'll be Little Mermaid, and they have cast Halle Bailey. From Chloe and Haley. Chloe and Holly. She's Holly Bailey.
It's Holly Bailey. Holly Bailey.
From Chloe and Holly.
Yeah, and Grownish.
And Grownish as the little mermaid, which of course sent the white people into a frenzy because, you know, their mermaid needs to be a white redhead for some fucking reason. Like, it's an affront to everything that's good and wholesome in the world to cast Ariel as a black girl.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was a whole huge thing. It turned into a It reached CNN. It reached like several news outlets who talked about it. Obviously, it was all over social media as well. And like you said, white girls, especially just going and women, well, not young women, going ham, like not being so mad that this black girl who's great and can sing her ass off and will be amazing, is cast as a mermaid, which is a fictional character. First off,
also a fictional creature.
Fictional creature, exactly. First off, and second off, Little Mermaid is based in the Caribbean seas.
Right.
What is black people like? What the fuck are you talking about? You know, so it was a whole huge thing. But you know, whatever Disney's like, whatever, nigga. we're doing this, and so I'm sure there'll be more controversy. But I think the black women especially are going to come out when this movie comes out and support this movie wholeheartedly. So I think. It'll be fine. I think it'll be fine. I wanted to also talk a little bit about A$AP Rocky.
Okay.
So, as a matter of fact, Brian, you want to take this one? Because I know you had some, you were talking about some security stuff and all that kind of went along with what happened here.
I can go. So A$AP Rocky is in Sweden. He's been arrested. He's been in jail now. They've held him for about a week or so now.
Yeah.
And the expectation is that he'll be held for another week or 2 weeks possibly.
Yeah.
For an assault charge. The assault was caught on videotape. Mm-hmm. It appears, and again, we're only looking at footage that we've seen from their side, right? But it seems like these guys are sort of following them and harassing, I'm going to use quotation marks because I don't really have a lot of context prior to those guys sort of arriving.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know kind of if that's harassing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't know. But anyway, long and the short of it is, you know, this video of him, they basically pummeled this kid in the street of Sweden. He was locked up. The video went viral of him trying to, say these guys are following us, things like that. So at this point, Rocky had some very sharp tongued things to say about social justice folks and Ferguson in particular. And that, you know, he says, you know, hey, man, that's not my reality.
I live in Soho.
I be fucking bitches. I live in Soho and Beverly Hills.
Yeah. And so a lot of the social media folks now, which I will say, this really kind of went dead. Like, after he was arrested, I hadn't heard a thing about this. And usually that's not the case. And I think people just kind of checked out on it and really was kind of like, oh, well, nigga, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I saw some Justice for Rocky posts, Justice for A$AP, I mean, posts. There's like
mostly from other rappers.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like a little graphic. And I guess some people on Twitter have been talking about boycotting IKEA, which is the dumbest shit. Like, y'all are so fucking retarded. Talking about boycotting IKEA because it's a Swedish company.
First of all, nigga, if you buying them dresses with 187 pieces, nigga, clearly, you ain't got many options. And you need to be at down to the IKEA.
Down to the IKEA. And you 16 niggas who's going to boycott IKEA are not putting a dent in their profit margin.
God bless, my nigga. But they're also like, hey, we're not going to go to Sweden. You know, we're not going to do shows in Sweden. And listen, again, you know, listen, God bless for you guys trying to show some level of support. But again, I don't really think that's going to move the needle in the way that you think it is.
No.
But what I found very interesting is that I've yet to see any of these, well-to-do, well-heeled Europeans and, you know, well-heeled white folks that these guys sort of always brag about hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't seemed to come up to bat for him in this case. And it's been really interesting to watch that, how, we often revert back to our own when it's when we're in trouble and when we're in danger and when we're sort of jammed up. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And you know, look, man, we'll see. I mean, you know, lots of artists have done this. You know, I don't want to just say this in you know, as this pertains just to Rocky, right? Like artists have done this all the time. Mm-hmm. Every time shit really hits the fan, you know, them crossover niggas always want to come back home. They always down to the church at 10 a.m. service. They want to call Al.
Yep.
They want to call Jesse.
Want to give a big, want to give one of them big ass checks away to somebody.
Yeah. You know, they had that Tom joined the cruise.
Word.
We're going to give a scholarship to Mars Brown.
Exactly. To Fisk.
What I was saying was, and we kind of talked about this a little bit on text message, and I think I talked about this maybe an episode or two ago, is that, you know, watching the movements of his guy doing security really left some questions for me. Mm-hmm. Listen, as a bodyguard, you know, your first and foremost thing is that you're there, obviously, to protect, you know, your asset. You're there to protect the client. But one of the things you have to remember is you're also there to protect them from themselves, right? Like, you're there. The goal is to always get home. That's literally your goal.
Mm-hmm.
Get home. Get home the same way you came to me. And so there are several instances here where I think that this could have been avoided. Now, I will say hindsight is always 20/20. And, but looking at this, first of all, physically, these two guys are not posing a threat. They're not imposing figures at all.
Right.
Yeah.
They clearly look to be, either, I was going to say that either they were on drugs or maybe they were drunk. They weren't inebriated. They weren't like stumbling over themselves, but they were clearly tweaking on something. What that something is, I have no idea.
Yeah, there was definitely some tweaking happening. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, okay, as a person doing security, like the first thing you definitely don't want to do is you don't want to go down an alley.
Yeah.
Right. Like, especially if you genuinely feel threatened, the best place for you to stay is in the most public squares you can possibly stay in. Second of all, like, my nigga, this ain't 145th Street. You cannot enact street justice in the same way in these foreign countries. It is not okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm telling y'all straight up and down, like, we talked about this with LeAngelo Ball got arrested over there in China, and we were dead serious about, like, yo, he kind of got off easy.
He got off, like, mad easy.
Like, I've been in countries, man, where they don't even really, like, it's frowned upon for foul language to be.
Really? Like, you could get, wow.
Not whipped necessarily, but just kind of like.
But they just like, yo, chill out, you know?
Yes. Like, they're cultural differences. This, you know, and that whole, you know, enacting street justice shit is very, it's very American. It's very, you know.
Yeah.
It's
y'all bust your silly ass, nigga. I'll fuck you up right here on the spot.
And so, again, there's just several instances here that this could have been avoided. And the first thing is you just get the guy out of there. Like, what were y'all doing that was so vital to the day that you needed to stay there with those guys?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, where was your driver? Where was your, you know, one of the things I learned very early on is that, one, you always, anytime you are in a foreign territory, you always keep a person, a local,
with you.
Because you don't understand where you are. You don't understand the culture.
Yeah.
And right now, my nigga, you're locked up in a foreign country with the worst possible administration available, my nigga. Like, you, like, nobody's.
Nobody from the Trump side is trying to help you get out.
Nobody's making calls. From what I read, basically, the embassy has been denied access to him, which means, like,
yeah, I saw that.
Who knows? Who knows what is going on?
Yeah.
Like, who knows? And listen, he very well may be in a really fucked up situation. you know, in terms of, you know, being in, I read where he said he was in a prison, and, you know, guy has mental health issues and some other issues. And you know, he's not eating and the food is this. And, you know, look, I don't know about all the ins and outs of that, but I also don't know that he's not telling the truth. And that's just, you know, this is why showing your ass overseas doesn't pay, my nigga. Like, this whole idea that, you know, innocent till proven guilty, and I get to have an attorney, and
yeah,
I
that's
have
all
rights.
United States shit.
That's very United States shit, my nigga. Yeah. Like, all of that can go out of the window.
Yep, and you just be stuck somewhere not knowing how long and for what's happening and what they're charging you with. None of that shit.
First off, man, I'm flabbergasted that he stayed and like he stayed, like I believe he turned himself in.
Mm-hmm. You say they should have just broke out,
nigga.
Yes.
Next plane smoking,
nigga. Right now, get me over the border.
Yeah,
give me my passport. Give me all the cash I have. You other niggas take my bags. I'll meet y'all somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just never going back to Sweden.
Catch me if you can, like the gingerbread man, nigga. You're exactly. Gonna have to take it in blood.
Yeah, we got to. Definitely. I got to go.
He ended up not even doing the show that he was there to do.
He did that show. He did that show, but then he missed. I guess it was that night he did that show, and then they arrested him, and then he missed like several shows after.
Yeah,
that.
He's lost a ton of money. Also, yeah, okay. I'm talking total shit, but I would suspect the reason he might have stayed. It's kind of because of what we talked about a minute ago, which is he felt like, oh, my people's going to hold me down. I talked to my man. He just said this, you know, once I go, my man will call and it will be straight. Like, I know that his father is so-and-so and such and such. I think he thought it was sweet. Like, oh, I'll get in there, but it ain't going to be nothing. They know who I am. And, you know,
well, maybe he just thought the video exonerated him.
Yeah, again. I was going to say that too, the video.
Making things work like they do over here.
But yeah. but also too, even when you look at the video, you know, guys, it's really difficult to claim self-defense when four of you guys are pounding on a 120-pound guy who's really not putting up a fight.
Yeah, and he's being a fucking pain in the ass because he won't stop following you, but he never, like, you know, like came at y'all swinging and why.
He did on a security guard.
Oh, because the security guard broke his headphones.
Let me say this. When the security guard went to go, he basically walked over to the guy in an aggressive way in which the guy sort of took his headphones or something like that or threw the headphones at him or something like that. From what I saw on the video, again, this is all just the context of the video. None of this is the before they taped or anything like that. But again, that's not self-defense. Like, you can't claim, you know, it's a very hard sell to make people think that you're claiming self-defense when you're literally the aggressor. You're literally the person walking over to the problem. Yeah. Like, that's just difficult. Like,
you're walking towards the action.
Yes. Like, there's so many ways that you have to defuse that. A big part of being a bodyguard and a big part of doing security is letting your ego go. And you be surprised how many guys get into altercations because of their ego in that job. Mm. Because they feel like they're being punked or they feel like
I ain't no sucker, nigga.
The goal is to get home, my nigga. That's always the goal. Get home, get your check, put food on your table, okay? Make sure your assets are fine. And that's it. All that other machismo shit, all that shit gonna have to go out the window. You know when I learned that? I learned that in Detroit. Okay, nigga? Because I was by myself, and I'm positive I wouldn't have made it out of there if I didn't have my head on my shoulders.
Right. Mm.
And because I was able to keep my head on my shoulders and because I was able to stay calm and cool, you got the sense that they backed off.
Yeah, because so if you would have been like, what's up there, nigga?
Or showing that I was afraid, or showing that I was showing some level of fear, but just being calm and being measured. That's why when you see guys that have been working for years and years and years, those guys are always calm.
Yeah.
They are always measured.
Yeah.
And mostly because they know what they can do.
Yeah, a lot of bodyguards, like you said, seem like they are out there like looking for the action, like looking for beef.
Yes,
like I'm waiting for one nigga to look wrong so I can set it off on them.
Exactly, you know? because they really don't have a concept of the greater good, right? And so ultimately what happens here is that say 4 or 5 shows have been missed, right? How do you think you're getting paid now?
Exactly.
Serious question.
Exactly.
How do you think you're getting paid? You didn't really present in a way that has made other people feel like you are. Like, I've gotten several jobs based on how I was handling myself on one job.
Mm.
Yeah, I like the way that guy moves. He does. Yeah, get his number. That's how that game works.
Yeah, it's all like referrals and stuff like that.
Yo, dude, one of the people that was doing security for some of the biggest stars in America, we met overseas. I met the guy overseas. He connected with the production guy. That's how he got the gig, because of how he moved.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you know, there's just a certain way you carry yourself. There's a certain expectation, and there's a certain level of professionalism that is expected when you're handling certain levels of artists.
Yeah,
and you know, it's just when you got somebody that's not really trained or doesn't really understand the ramifications of this, then yeah, you can have that, man. You can have that, because this isn't even just about prison, right? This is also about lawsuits,
mm-hmm.
potential you be jammed up, potential for your passports and shit to be, you know, tied.
Yeah,
up. Like, who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's not just like, oh, you're gonna get out, go home, and everything is back to normal. You know, so, I mean, you know, I, you know, wish the kid well. He's in a terrible space. And, you know, and also, like, it's not guaranteed that he's not going to get off having to do a little bit of time in Sweden. I hope not, but it's not guaranteed he's going to get out and go home and that's it.
He very well may have to do, like, some time there. Maybe 9 months, maybe 6 months, whatever it is. But, like, my guy, like, you guys are kind of pummeling the guy. Like, it wasn't like, oh, yo, they shoved the guy. Like, y'all duffing him out.
Yeah, you're fucking him up.
Yeah,
you're fucking him up.
Bro,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, Rocky, good luck. That's a horrible space to be in. Like, Sweden, Swedish prison. Whew, oh, my goodness. You know, it's terrible. So, I don't know, man. Say good luck and Godspeed. Because you're gonna need some help on that one. Now you want to talk a little bit about the, Bluebell ice cream incidents. Cause now this is turning into a thing. Like, niggas is doing all kind of dumb shit now in stores, like,
well,
for the gram.
Yeah.
Fucking jackasses.
So I guess at this point it was like the beginning of last week or last weekend, not the holiday weekend, but the previous weekend.
Yeah. About that.
A video went viral of a girl, she looked like a young woman, but it turns out it's a girl, licking, I mean, like, taking a broad lick with her whole tongue across the top of a pint of Bluebell ice cream.
I think it was a gallon.
Yeah, a gallon. Sorry.
It was a big thing.
And Bluebell has the way they seal their lids, they don't do a plastic seal. They do some kind of freezing process where if someone has taken the lid off, it is noticeable. So that they're, like, if the lid has been taken off and put back on, it's supposedly immediately apparent.
Okay.
So they don't use a plastic cover.
Okay.
So she licks the top of it. She puts it back in the case. And then, and I'm phrasing this way for a reason that I'll say in a minute. And then online, someone saying they were her took credit for it and says,
"Oh, that wasn't her own."
Yeah, and says, "I just got over the flu last week. You know, let's start an let's get this challenge going. Let's start an epidemic, literally." And that part goes viral.
Mm-hmm.
So people immediately start talking about the fact that a certain level of food tampering is a felony because of the Tylenol cyanide poisoning back in the 80s. Was that the 80s?
Late 70s? It was like,
Yeah, which is also the reason that sometimes we need like full equipment to open up food packaging. And saying, you know, like this callousness deserve there because an argument starts on Twitter about what kind of punishment is deserved here, right? Yeah. Like, because some people are like, oh, you just lick the ice cream carton, everything can't be about incarceration and blah, blah, blah. But other people are like, yo, she said she had the flu, people could get sick, but also, then you see copycats doing it, like you said, Jeff, even though of those people, everybody I saw so far said, they actually went back and bought it, but one dude actually got picked up by the cops when he showed the cops his receipt. Apparently they're still charging him with pretending or like pretending to commit a crime or some shit like that. Apparently
the black guy.
Yeah, apparently that in and of itself.
And the thing about that dude, I mean, my issue with that guy, not to cut you off now, is like, yo, that nigga's 36. It's like, nigga, you're like a grown-ass man. What are you doing?
Yeah, he's too old for this bullshit.
Yeah, you're way too old for this fucking childish, or you know, clout chasing, nigga. You're like damn near 40. Like, what are you doing?
So it comes out in the next couple of days that Bluebell, and my point was like, there's got to be at least some punitive something, because if nothing else, this is going to be a L for Bluebell, because they're going to have to, if they can't identify the store quickly, they're going to have to pull all that stock from every Walmart, right? So apparently over the course of a couple of days, Bluebell identified the Walmart. They think they found the carton, all this stuff, and they notified the authorities, and Bluebell just got over like this big listeria outbreak like a year ago. And the girl finally, I think over the holiday weekend, she and her boyfriend turned herself in. So it turns out that the girl is 17. And the person online, and this is why it took them, because we were all like, why is it taking y'all a long time to find her? It's because the person who took credit for the video was not her.
Oh.
So the person who said the thing about the flu and everything wasn't actually her. So I was one of those people like, listen, I don't know if it's felony charge, but it's definitely a misdemeanor. Fuck that shit. But I walked it back a little bit due to the fact that she's 17 and that flu shit wasn't real, but it's still serious. Like,
it's serious business, about, like, oh, man.
Ice cream, and I'm like, keep that same energy about somebody spitting in your food.
Exactly,
you
know, that's literally like, the same thing. It's literally if you was at the cookout and little Peanut licked the fucking ice cream, the whole family would be like to his mom, "Get your fucking kid! What the fuck is he doing?"
Right.
But now, because it's online, niggas are like, yo, it ain't really that big a deal. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? Somebody who you don't know from a can of paint is licking the whole fucking gallon of fucking Breyers, and y'all acting like the shit is cool? Come on, man.
Yeah, I think this is the issue that we face, is that there is no nuance, and it is okay to say, I don't really have the answer for this. I know this isn't right, and I know this extreme of no penalties isn't right. And I know this extreme of 20 years in prison isn't right. And there's never anybody to be able to say, hey, I don't quite know the answer to what is appropriate, but I know these extremes aren't. And
exactly.
That's kind of where I fell. Listen, I don't want to see this young lady, charged with something that is going to haunt her for the rest of her life for doing something that is very, very dumb. It was very stupid. It was very, it was also very indicative of this generation, right? Like, it was wildly selfish, right? Like, just, you know what I'm saying? So, there does need to be something, but I don't know where the abolished prison Twitter, like they have, like, they basically, there should be no repercussions for anything. And also, I'll say this also, look, it probably would have been ideal for her to have her parents or her guardians take her in a little earlier.
Yeah. Because she had to know they were looking for her ass.
She was everywhere. She was everywhere.
She was on CNN. Like, come on, man.
She did it because she's on social media, right? So it's not like she just...
True.
You know, went into hiding after that. She was still on her phone. And yeah, I mean, it was disgusting. You know, the copycat folks are crazy. But also, too, I think Bluebell, it might be time for you guys to start thinking about those.
Doing the shrink wrap.
Yeah, the tamper-proof shit, which is wild crazy to me. And listen, are they going a little hard on her? I mean, sure, they're going a little hard on her, but...
But I understand why, though. Like,
they set a precedent.
I understand why they have to go this hard. Because if they, especially after, like I said, they just recovered from a listeria outbreak. So to show that they weren't taking this very seriously just wouldn't bode well for them as a company.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Listen, I mean, you also, like you said, you have to set precedent, right? Like, you can't just have people thinking that the only thing they're going to do is, you know, get a slap on the wrist and, you know, clean up a street if they go out and do this. And yes, in America, there is a trust. When you go into a supermarket, there is an inherent expectation that you are getting fresh food. And by fresh food, I mean food that has not been tampered with. Food that is coming from, you know, wherever its source is to this location untampered. That is an absolute trust. If you go in and look at the supermarket, right, like there are tons of things that can be tampered with. The only reason that this whole system of ours works is because there's an understanding of that.
Yeah, that you don't do shit, you don't touch the food, you don't spit on, you know? And if something happens, like somebody's there to like get it out of there so nobody gets sick.
And even with the cucumber chicks, it's like, yeah, that's really fucking disgusting. It's really nasty. I also hope you are washing.
Super nasty.
I hope you're also washing your fucking cucumbers before you chop them up and peel them or whatever, right? But the ice cream situation was a little different, right? Because there's nothing to peel, right? Like, you kind of get home and you
pull that top off and you go.
Yeah. I saw a guy yesterday online, another kid who looks way too old for this shit. He's like spitting in a fucking Arizona, the gallon iced to sweet tea thing.
Yeah.
He spits in it, puts the top back on, and I'm just like,
who raised you, niggas?
That's the other thing is just why? Like, why? Yeah,
who raised you, niggas? Seriously.
Who thinks that shit is funny? Like, exactly. Who thinks
I think it's a very generational thing, right? Because I think what they're really looking for is they're actually looking for people to get sick, not die. They don't want to see people crippled or fucked up or anything like that. But yeah, she probably thought it would be really cool if those people got sick, or he thought it would be really cool if people got sick and it was all on the news. 12 people got sick from eating X, Y, and Z. They're the epicenter, right? Like,
I started that. I set that off.
Exactly. But that's called sociopathy. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just
very, very this generation. These niggas are crazy.
You think it's crazy?
These niggas are crazy.
Sidebar, because you just said something, Sean. The other epidemic, I guess, for lack of a better term, is this whole girl sucking cucumbers on the internet. Like, I know. No, I'm saying I want to get into it a little more. That was started by this kid. He's not a kid. He's a grown up. But it's kind of B King Kong, who's an artist out of Houston. And what he would do was, when he would go to his shows, or still does, he would bring cucumbers, and then, like, you know, put the cucumber by his dick or whatever, and then the girls would come on stage and then, like, they'd go, "Show me how you suck a dick," and they suck a cucumber or whatever, right? And then he kind of turned into this whole thing. Of course, he's filming it, putting it on the internet, and it started to explode, and now it's become like this whole cucumber challenge. And my thing to that is, like, I I'm an old nigga, you know what I'm saying? I was just dancing to Frankie Beverly, so you know, I know who I am, but like, how is that sexy?
Yeah,
like, I don't understand how that turns you on to watch a girl suck a fucking vegetable. Like, this shit was just weird. This shit, that whole thing is just weird to me. Like, I just don't get, like, what the what the value of it is, you know? But again, I guess it's just this generation doing what they do. I don't know. These niggas, like Sean said, these niggas is crazy out here, man. Yeah, they fucking bonkers. I want to mention that the whole woman, the woman I wed thread.
Or the list ten things about the woman.
Yeah, so there's this guy, what's his name, Bob something on Twitter.
And he's Nigerian or Ghanaian or something. I think that's relevant.
Oh, okay. So he listed these 10 things that his girl, now wife, they're married now, correct?
I don't know if they're getting married this weekend coming or getting married last weekend past, but if they're not married now, it's imminent.
Yeah, Bob Fondo, that's his name. Mm-hmm. And he listed these 10 things that his soon-to-be, if not already, wife did for him to kind of, to quote-unquote, hold him down while he was trying to find himself.
Yeah, but the way he positioned it was like, here's a list of 10 things I want to tell you about this woman I'm about to marry.
Exactly.
None of the things were about her. They were all just stuff she did for him.
Yeah, Financially, exactly. He never once mentioned that he loved her.
Or like a single personality trait or anything. So it was like, when she met me, I was sleeping on a couch. She knew that she didn't care. Mm. You know, when I got my first apartment, she paid my rent the first couple of months. She bought me my first car.
Yep.
My laptop was broke. She gave me hers. She created
paid for all the dates.
Yeah, I don't think he said that.
No, he said he covered
multiple
dates for a year.
She created our first two businesses so I could run them.
And invested in them.
She championed every venture I did, even if it didn't make us any money. And the one random thing was like, I didn't meet her mom. And so I brought my family to meet. I don't know what the fuck that meant, but, and then at the end, he was like, I know she doesn't care about material things and all that because she's proven it again and again and again. She solely cares about me. And the thing is just, you know, we see these posts over and over again where a nigga is like, you know, my life was in shambles and I was in jail doing 2 to 25 and I had 6 baby mamas, but shorty ain't care even though I cheated on her 82 times. Or, you know, she ain't much to look at, but she's mine. You know, she got a flat ass and she's not a glamour girl and she's not, you know, an IG model, but I love her anyway. Like, it's really like these posts where men are allegedly praising women, but it's not at all really in praise of the woman. Like,
and sidebar, this girl's actually very attractive.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
And so, of course, obviously people reacted because they was like, what the fuck kind of shit is this? And also, like, why, you know, one person said in his comments, which I think summed it all up, like, your mom looks so young. You know, that's what it was. Like, nigga, she raised you.
Yeah.
Crazy. And your praise isn't even like, she did all these things which tells, and because, you know, she has such a good heart and she does stuff for other people too. It's just like, me, shit it for me.
Yeah. It's wild because, like you said, it's just all about he made it all about him, and he tapped into the whole thing of basically what a lot of niggas feel, and you know, sadly, a lot of women have been taught to feel this too, which is like if you want a man, you got to really go through a lot of suffering, a lot of pain and discomfort,
and build him up,
and suck up all the fuckery shit that a nigga does if you want that prize at the end of the rainbow, which is nigga to marry you. Now, I don't know anything else. We don't know this guy or anything about
this guy. Well, I will say this. I went and did like a sweep through his timeline not too far after. And I will
name
say
this. Sent you and Jeff Sledge a new message.
Sean, you loud. I will say that I went through his Twitter later. And there is a post, like, I guess she just, either they're young, either she just graduated from grad school or something.
Yeah, they're young. They're definitely young.
And, you know, he did say in one post, like, my only job is to hold her crown up, you know, or something like that. And in another post, he was saying, like, you know, he's excited about doing this for everything with her. So there were some other posts that seemed more appropriate, but it still bothers me that, and I think this is the point that women were trying to make, that when, because everybody's like, he's just showing her appreciation for her. And I was like, yeah, for shit she did for him. But, like, if you do a whole litany of things and everything is financial, what does that say about why you appreciate her, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, clearly, you made a gesture. This wasn't an off-the-cuff tweet. You made this grand gesture of, like, I'm about to marry this woman. Let me tell you why. And everything except one was because she came out of her pocket.
Yep. And also what I'd like to know is, like, what precedent does that set moving forward?
For your marriage, right. You've never had to bring, because somebody actually asked him, like, well, what do you bring to her life? And he was just like, that's a good question. And he didn't answer it. So it's like, you have set a precedent in your marriage to take care of everything. So now when kids come, When kids come, you handling all that. Like, that nigga not handling.
When kids come, he ain't doing shit. He's not doing a fucking thing. He's not changing 1 ounce of his lifestyle or his movements when the kids come. He's going to keep it pushing just like he's keeping it pushing now. I'm going out. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. You handle that. Good luck. And better have my fucking dinner ready when I get here. And by the way, I need some money because I'm going out with Tommy and them, and I'm short this week. That's all it's going to be. Yeah, and if she ever kind of bucks back, he's going to look back at her like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is how we do.
Well, just as a husband, and one of the first things you learn, or one of the first things you should learn as a husband, is how to protect your wife. And that just doesn't mean physically. Like, that also means, like, protecting her emotionally and making sure that she is, you know, okay, and that she's fine. Mm-hmm. This is one of those times where this was an unnecessary thing to do, because she may not have wanted everyone to know
True.
What she had done for you.
Right.
No, hold your thoughts. Please hold your thoughts, Sean. I just want to say one thing to your point. That when he said that she never brought him to her mom's, that's what made me think. And well, she's why. Embarrassed to bring him to his mom, because she's embarrassed that her mother is going to hear all the stupid shit she's doing.
That's what I thought too.
Sorry, Sean. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to say that.
Yes. No. That's fine. But he is just. To put that information out there was unnecessary, and what it really showed me is that there are actually a lot of people, even though I think this guy was of a different culture, there are a lot of people who believe in this and believe in this whole sort of marrying for business purposes, and I need to build my empire. With this one, and I need to build my, like, do you even like this motherfucker? Like I mean that sincerely. Like, one of the reasons why I always say, one of the reasons there's such a fucking high divorce rate with athletes and entertainers when they retire is because they don't really like these motherfuckers.
Yeah, and they don't know him.
You don't know him. That's what I'm saying. You don't know. Like, so that's the first thing that popped into my head. Like, my nigga, can you imagine life without her? Like, how do you feel when you're with her? Like, none of those things are mentioned. Like, no feeling. Everything was transactional. The entirety of their relationship's foundation is transactional.
Yep.
It is, you know, what she has done and how she has helped me get to something that I wanted to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And at no part did he simply just say, I enjoy her. Like, I, you know, not to, like, get mushy, right. But, like, I enjoy my wife's company.
Right.
I literally do. Like, you know what I'm saying? She's fun. She's funny. All of those sorts of things. And, like, to just see a marriage. And then I just want to say this, too. I thought that there were several people that were unnecessarily harsh to that woman.
Yeah,
that woman didn't ask for this.
Yep,
she didn't post this. And again, this sort of goes back to protecting your wife, right? you know, a couple of people were really, really unnecessarily mean, and I just didn't like the vibe of that. And there was a lot of LOLs, and a lot of some of these Twitter favorites were kiki-ing and high-fiving each other with some of that shit. And honestly, man, it was fucking disgusting. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because you know what? A lot of you niggas are still putting money on somebody's books.
Yep, y'all doing the same dumb
you,
shit.
A lot of you niggas are still paying for studio time for you know, somebody that's 38 and trying to put out a mixtape. Oh, some streams.
On SoundCloud.
That nigga is in the music industry, and I was like, of course he is.
Oh, he is.
It makes perfect sense, right?
Wow. It makes
all the sense, right? So so I say all that to say, like, I look, I think that the kid was well-intended. I think he has an incredibly warped idea of what a relationship should be and how you love each other and why you should love each other. I also think that that woman might have some of those same sort of issues.
Yeah.
Maybe she's angling, like she wants this particular guy. She's willing to go to whatever lengths. But again, that's her personal choice. That's her private business. He didn't have to share that with the world and put this woman on Front Street.
With the world, Craig.
Yo,
the whole world.
I'm like, yo, this is wild. And like to see her become a meme or to see her become a joke. And I'm like, That's just uncool. It felt very high school, very bullyish, very mean girls. That shit rubbed me really, really bad.
Yeah, like I agree with you, Sean. Like, he really put her like in the fucking bullseye, and just you know, just had her get you know ripped from pillar to post. Like you said, for some shit that she had nothing to do with. Like she didn't post it. She didn't even never comment, as far as I saw, on what he posted. Like she was probably at work.
You know nothing. What I'm
saying? When
nothing.
The shit was up, and she was like, "What the fuck is going on?" And not to cut you off. And also, it's probably maybe several of her friends who was probably like, "I didn't know you did this."
That's my point. that is my point. Like, as a married couple, one of the first things, you know, as a husband you should learn is that you should be protecting your wife. As a married couple, one of the first things you should be learning is how to shut the fuck up about your personal business and learn how to distribute that shit on an as-needed basis, my nigga. And this was not a needed basis.
Exactly. Exactly. Now you got her aunties and them who like, wait, what she did? What?
Yo,
you know?
Dude, you don't even know what she did to get any of that. She might have been borrowing. She might have told her aunts or her uncles or, you know, help me get my business or help me do this. And no, I don't have no man and I don't do whatever. It's probably lied, whatever, right? Like, you know, people do shit for love. Whatever. I'm not tripping on that, but I'm just like, why put her in that unnecessary crosshair? And you know, really, man, look, God bless him. I wish him well. I hope whatever their union is, it flourishes and works out. I hope their businesses grow and be profitable. But, you know, that it was just a poor articulation of how you go into a marriage, in my opinion, and the things that you should be looking for in a mate.
I agree 1,000%. We're gonna wrap it up with Essence Fest. Like I said earlier in the show, all three of us are down there. And so, you know, I guess we all three had kind of like different experiences. I'm gonna go first because this was actually my first time going to Essence Fest,
which is insane.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It is. I'll take all those bullets. It's stupid. So I went obviously for the first time Friday night. I went, I guess, care of Atlantic Records and Missy Elliott because she headlined Friday night. So I went down Thursday. I didn't really do much Thursday night actually. And then just kind of walked around a little bit. I got there late. My plane was crazy delayed. So then Friday, I kind of hit the ground running and went over to the Fashion House. That's where I met Angel from Pose. Saw a couple panels. Then went to the show Friday evening with Missy Elliott headlined. And so, and she's actually the only person I saw Friday because I got to the venue late. Why are you there so late? Because my girl flew in that day.
Oh, okay.
So by the time she didn't get there to like 7 or so or something like that, 7, 8, 9, I had to wait for her, of course. And then, you know, getting, you know, getting dressed and blah, blah, blah. Just, so I just got there mad late. But, I mean, it was cool because I got there before Missy got on, but I was backstage in her area. So I saw some people back there. And I saw Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike from the monitors, and who looked like the show was okay. It looked like Bobby was just kind of just doing what he... That's not surprising, kind of right. just doing what
but
he
with
wants
them,
to do.
You have to, but with them, you have to feel the energy on the floor. Because if you watch them just from the monitor, it's going to be like, it's whatever. But they, you know, the great thing about the Essence audience is that acts who are far past their peak can get by off of nostalgia if you sing the hits.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think watching any artist perform at Essence on the monitors is totally a waste of time.
Right.
Because you have to be in the venue to feel that energy. I agree with you 10,000% on that. So I don't know how they did really, because like I said, I just watched it from the monitors. Yeah, you know, and like I said, I missed the performance. She did a pretty good performance. And then Saturday, I forget what I did during the day on Saturday.
Well, wait, instead of going moment by moment, since it was your first experience, how did you enjoy your overall?
Okay, overall.
Like, what were your highlights?
Okay, my highlights were, honestly, not through the music. The performances. I'm gonna take that out of the highlights. So just overall, experience. My highlights were what I thought it was gonna be, which is like it was literally like a 700 or a million. How many people were there?
500,000.
500,000 people family reunion.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Like it's like it sounds kind of cliche, but
it's
literally
real.
That. Like it's like this like everybody saying hi to everybody. Everybody's speaking. Everybody's polite. Everybody's helpful. Even if it's like a crowded space and it's hot, nobody's like beefing. You know what I'm saying? There's like even the slightest inkling of beef, people will look at you like, "What the fuck are you doing?" You know what I'm saying? Like it's just like the energy is just so beautiful for all these black people, obviously from different places. I think for the most part, there is a tie amongst all of the people who go there to Southern culture. And even if we're not from the South,
there's
like a tie, like your family might be. This is a cultural thing that connects most of us when we're there. We know how to act. We know how to speak to people. We know how to treat our elders. There's little kind of things in our culture that we say to each other that we know what they mean. You know what I'm saying? That we know how that feels.
Right.
You know, all that is there. And it just felt so good to walk. My girl just kept saying, "I can't believe there's so many black people here." You know what I'm saying? You know, like I said, but it was just a beautiful energy to be around, man. You know, of course, New Orleans is a great city. The food is good and all that stuff. And now they've got it down to a science on how they accommodate, because they've done it so long, on how to accommodate the festival. So everything is, you kind of get around. Yes, traffic and stuff like that. But, you know, you figure it out. And, you know, you can kind of get around. And people are just, you know, the hotel, everywhere you go, it's like everybody knows you're there for Essence. And it's not a phony friendliness. It's like people are genuinely happy to be there and then happy to see you. That's what felt really, really good to me. You know what I'm saying? Like when I went over to the convention center, and the convention center is, you know, it's a lot going on. You know what I'm saying? Because it'll be like somebody literally like performing in that corner, and then over there,
there's a panel
exactly over
and
there,
a bubble competition
over there. And then here comes Thelma from Good Times walking through, taking pictures.
Right.
And then there goes Cynthia Bailey over. It's like it's a lot happening. So your head is kind of spinning on a swivel. And, you know, like you said, because there's a lot. And then there's people like trying to also give like, you know, real information out there. There's health, you know, panels, and there's doctors behind desks talking to you about things. And, you know, it's a lot going on. But even in that, it's just like you're just kind of moving around. And it's almost like, it almost feels like you're walking through a museum of black culture.
Yes.
When you're walking through the convention center, like, oh, like this is where the aunties are, and this is where this is at, and this is where the blah, 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 blah. And I went to the back and we sat and watched Ayana. Ayana did a talk. We watched her for like a half an hour. And then you just walk out and you go over here and people taking pictures in front of the Essence thing with the flowers. It's just like, you know what I mean? It was just a beautiful weekend. Even the plane, the airport, it's just a beautiful. Yesterday was interesting because you can tell people were not only tired yesterday going home, but people were kind of like.
You mean Monday?
Monday. Yeah, yes, that was was it? No, day for yesterday. Excuse me, I'm tripping. You know how I am with the days. Monday. People were definitely tired going home Monday. But people also were very kind of sad it was over.
Yeah, you go home very full. You go home tired, but full. And people are still posting. I'm still posting recaps because I didn't get everything out of my phone yet because service down there was trash because there's so many of us.
So many people. And
there's a lot of Essence Fest owes me nothing. New Orleans owes me nothing. You know, like that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it is such a, and I'll be honest, this year was a lot. First of all, it was one of the hottest years.
Yes, the weather, it was hot.
It's never not hot, but this was one of the hottest years.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, this is the worst the traffic has ever been. Yeah. I just got to the point, my hotel was a mile away from the convention center, and I just walked to and from the convention center, twice, I think, because going there in an Uber took, an hour. It was crazy.
Yeah, I walked from the Superdome to my hotel Saturday and Sunday night.
Well, I picked a hotel that was close to the Superdome for that very reason, because leaving the Superdome is always hard.
There's no Uber. You're not getting an Uber. It's a waste of time.
At least a quarter mile before you can even get an Uber.
So you might as well just keep walking.
Right. So I think my hotel was a 9-minute walk from the Superdome. So that was totally easy.
Where'd you stay, by the way?
I stayed at this place called the Jung Condo and Residences. It's on the end of Canal near Tulane. So it's it's at the less busy end of Canal.
Okay.
But you're still on Canal, so you're so close to things.
Okay.
But it was really literally I just walked down LaSalle, and that's the street that stops right at the top of the Superdome parking lot or whatever. But I think that even though I was irritated at times, oh my God, so many people here, the lines mm-hmm. are crazy, traffic's crazy, it's too much to do, I'm overwhelmed. By the time I left, I was like, I'll be back next year. You know what I mean? It's just so much love, and it's so much like you said, it's like people, it's a lot of uplift too, you see yes. Shirley and them and they little matching shirts, and you'd be like, y'all got no hat with your matching shirt, you know
the little girls trip 2019 t-shirts.
You meet no strangers. At Essence, and even just the shows, what I love about, my favorite thing about the shows every night, it's not just the performances, but I love watching the people.
Of course.
You always run into people. That's the easiest place, in my opinion, to actually see people is mm-hmm. at Superdome. You always run into people. Industry folks you just kind of randomly know, other people who are down there. And I love watching the staff because during performances, the ushers and them be getting it in.
What I was about to say, I was going to give you a staff story real quick. That's literally the essence of Essence.
Right.
So Friday, like I said, I saw Missy. So I was backstage and I was on the side of the stage. I never sat down Friday. So Saturday and Sunday, I sat down. Bro actually gave me tickets Saturday because him and Mona decided not to go. That was the night of Michelle and Mary. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday, we are all kind of in that same area. So my point is, so Saturday, the usher who manned the gate entrance was a black woman, looked to be in her mid-40s, Cassie, somebody, so she saw us come in, and then, we walked out in and out a couple of times, got something to drink, blah, blah. So, but she kind of started to recognize my face. So the end of that night, I was like, okay, bye, bro. So the Sunday night was, Frankie Beverly. So as soon as I woke up, I didn't have to show my ticket.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, hey, baby. She gave me a hug.
I love it.
I don't know this woman for a can of paint. She gave me a hug, or a mama hug, which I readily accepted. And she was like, go on, have a good time. It was a blast, which we'll get into in a minute about the shows. And then leaving at the end of the night, she saw me again, and she gave me a massive hug.
I love it.
Did you have fun? Gave me a massive hug. She said, I'm going to see you next year, right? I was like, I'll be back. That's the essence of Essence.
All black women love you, Jeff.
They do.
They just gravitate to you.
Oh, by the way, I got to give my quick story to Miss Marion, who takes care of me in Atlanta at the hotel in Atlanta. When I saw her, I had bought her a bottle of Bailey's and Kahlua chocolate balls that they make. You can kind of mm-hmm. eat them, whatever. A few months ago when I saw her, and so when I saw her, she gave me the big mama hug. And she was like, you kidding? You know where to get any more of those Kahlua balls from? I said, yeah, I do. I said, I got you. So the store's literally up the street from the hotel. So I bought her two boxes of them. I brought them back. She gave me the big hug. She's like, I love you. I take one of these every night before I go to bed. She's like a baby. You know what I'm saying? That's my auntie down there in Atlanta. She takes care of me.
All black women love Jeffrey. But yeah, I mean, that is the thing about Essence is that it is a lot of love. It's a lot of energy. And for an artist, even like I was saying earlier, even for sets that are underwhelming, because I will say on the performance side, even though the festival itself was bigger than ever this year, they added all these new activations, and there was the fashion house and the wellness house, mm-hmm. and you know, BT had a house, and Motown had a house, and
mm-hmm. Spotify,
you know, and stuff, and Spotify had a house, and mm-hmm. you know, it's like after Girls Trip was kind of a tipping point, even though Essence had already been doing 400,000 numbers for years, all of a sudden brands who were ignoring it were like, oh, we really do need to be down here. And you know, there was also a younger contingent of fans that came in this year, like the Duce Palooza, and even though mm-hmm, Mario mm-hmm. was there last year, mm-hmm, but you know, yeah. that whole blogger media crew was
yeah.
there this year. Yep. But it's like but even though the festival was bigger, this wasn't one of the strongest lineups this year all around for the shows. And I think sometimes in trying to marry old and new, sometimes it works and sometimes it feels a little disjointed. But even when it feels disjointed, like Teddy said, was mad disjointed.
Mad. Pharrell saved his ass. And I love Teddy. Like, I love Teddy personally and professionally.
But Teddy said was mad disjointed. But the thing about the Essence audience is that even when they ain't really with it, they're not going to be rude.
Yeah, nobody booing nobody.
They're not going to boo you.
No.
They may leave and go get a drink, go to the Super Lounge, go do whatever. But they're not gonna boo you.
No, never.
It's a safe performance space.
Yes,
it is. You know, it's a safe stage.
Well, let's talk about the performances real quick. Like I said,
wait, well, Sean, what was?
I'm sorry.
Though, so I don't even know if you had a chance.
Bro was all over the place this weekend.
Yeah, you know, same shit. You know, we've been doing Essence for quite some time, so it's basically the same things. You know, Mona had a few speaking engagements that are, you know, obviously I got to kind of go with her to those things. I did get a chance to sneak away from the Mary brunch.
Yeah, I saw Mona. And I was like,
I was able to skate out of that. So, of course, I did. But, you know, New Orleans is New Orleans. It's a city that I love. It's literally, like I said, it's probably the most on the last day. We went down. So, you know, it was cool. All the things you guys said, it, you know, is accurate. We can go into the performance.
Yeah. It was so Missy did Friday night. I mean, I guess I'm a little biased because obviously I'm so close to her. So I thought the performance was really good. But again, I'm looking at it from a different eye than the kind of people in the crowd. And I was kind of off to the side, so I wasn't really in the crowd. I was looking around. It seemed like people were enjoying it, but I wasn't like kind of in the middle where I could really tell.
People,
I think so.
Yeah, no, because people love Missy, obviously.
Yes.
And people love her energy. There were some moments of transitions where like the energy was up and then the energy dropped. And then the energy was up and then the energy dropped. But overall, like, people love it. Missy, and I know that was a highlight for a lot of people. And it was also very dope because she brought Trina out,
mm-hmm.
the One Minute Man remix, and she brought Monica came out to do So Gone, which was really great. And you know, then Missy closed out for Lose Control by getting in the audience.
Yeah.
Which was like everybody went bonkers after that, you know.
Yeah.
So that was great. And I could tell at first that Missy was a little bit nervous, but then she seemed to like relax and like, you know, just kind of enjoy herself. That's always my thing, is looking to see if the artist is having fun, because I feel like some artists really do have fun in the Essence stage.
And that transfers into the
yeah, because like I said, it's a friendly crowd.
Yeah, they want to. They're there to love you. They want.
Yeah,
to
they
love
want.
You.
Like Essence is going. Essence isn't like a critical crowd that's there. Like, no. Motherfucker. Essence wants. They want a two step. They like sing some shit I know so I can get my dance on.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
That's what they want to do. Exactly. And Robbie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike came before. Missy and y'all know I've said this on the show before, like I see them regularly and over the years, and you know they're all 50, so it's not the exact same, although BBD tour enough so that they keep a really pretty high energy show as them, as the three of them, and they've modified some of like the steps and you know some of that. Bobby just be out there. Bobby's just like, whatever.
Bobby's whatever.
He did a whole verse of That's the Way Love Is from like backstage. I don't know what was happening. I think he changed clothes. I don't know what the fuck was going on. He rambled about Bobby Christina in the middle of Roni. But Bobby's still Bobby. You know what I mean? And it's like, this is a crowd that's still going to, like, I was walking in as he was doing. They opened the set with My Prerogative. So I was walking in, like, dancing to My Prerogative, trying to get to my seat. And the crowd still loves it because they know the songs, they know this. And like I said, it's the nostalgia factor. And then Saturday was, Nas. And then, but before Nas, it was like, Ledisi, her, somebody else. I wasn't there for that. Then Nas. And then Michelle Obama, which was like, a highlight for everybody, which was amazing.
Yeah, I missed Nas. I wasn't tripping on Nas.
Doing her Becoming Talk, which she toured with.
With Gayle King. Gayle King did the interview.
Yeah, Gayle King did the interview, and it was really powerful. And Michelle is, like, I didn't know I could love her anymore, but she is exactly as real and exactly as down to earth and exactly as funny as we all thought she was.
And I think the kind of like what you were saying, that being in that crowd,
yeah,
that energy, in you know, like 70,000 black people, literally, you know what I'm saying, gave her even more energy to even be more, you know, kind of, and not say that she's ever phony because I don't think she is, but like this being amongst your folks made her even more comfortable and you know more relaxed and more funny. She's very funny.
She's very funny. Her timing is great. She's super pretty. Yeah, she's great.
Yes, and she talked about Barack and, you know, like their little, you know, how they met and how they're kind of empty nesters now and how they getting their swerve back and, you know. But then she also definitely, like, peppered in messages about voting and about, you know, talked a lot about, you know, black women and black, you know, people in general, like with marriage and
black relationships.
And she talked about a lot of things and the way she moved through it. And, you know, it was dope, man. She was fucking awesome. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, not Mad Gems. None of it was heavy-handed.
No, it was it wasn't preachy at all. It was like your auntie at the kitchen table after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And y'all talking.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's literally what it was. Like, your two favorite aunts at the kitchen table, and y'all talking, and she's like, y'all come over here, I need to tell y'all about this. And that's
it felt very intimate.
It did.
Which is amazing, again, in a stadium. It felt very intimate. And so that was a great moment. And then, let me back up. On Friday in the Super Lounge, PJ Morton, the Super Lounges are the smaller side stages for those who've never been to Essence. So there's one that usually is like old school. There's one that's like kind of new and up and coming. This year they had one that was all Afrobeat. PJ Morton did a live album recording on Friday night, which was dope. He had like BJ the Chicago Kid and Ledisi and Luke James and some other people with him. So that was cool. And on Saturday, Dougie did a set with Big Daddy Kane, El DeBarge, Scarface, Slick Rick. And the line for it was, I didn't get in because the line for it was around the corner, like before
the
set started. Wow. And I was really sad because I really wanted to see that set. So I was really upset about that. But so there was Nas, there was Michelle Obama, and then there was Mary, who has headlined for the past 3 years. This is her third year in a row.
Yep.
Which, of course, people love because that, like, Mary, this is Mary's
crowd.
This is Mary's shit.
This is the Mary demo.
Is the Mary J. Blige, the Mary J. Blige demo. Like,
exactly.
So Mary, and then Sunday, everybody put on a good white.
Yep.
And this is what I love about us. So like in Coachella, everybody put on their little flower crowns and their little fringe clothes and whatever. At Essence, you put on your white.
Yep.
Because we going to see Frankie. And I was coming in and I saw KP Prather, who works with Pharrell.
Oh, I didn't see KP.
Yeah, KP was there with Pharrell.
I'm thinking he was.
Yeah, and it was KP's first Essence. So KP was like, in just for the listener audience, KP used to be at LaFace. He discovered and signed T.I. He was then at Sony. He signed John Legend. So he's like a longtime masterful A&R. Well, he was at LaFace and then Arista. So T.I.'s first album was on Arista and then L.A. dropped him. But anyway, and so he's like a longtime A&R, been in this game forever, and now works for I Am Other. And KP was like, why everybody going on white? He was like, I ain't got no white. And I was like, for Frankie. And, you know, it's just something that we all knew. Like, mm-hmm. You want to see Frankie Beverly and Maze, you wear white.
Black people wear white to two places, Frankie Beverly and Maze and a boat ride.
Exactly. Like, you put on some white. And what's great about, in talking about the way the Essence audience is, Frankie has had throat issues for a decade. His voice has been going for like a whole
thing. It's pretty much shot.
Yeah, it's pretty much shot. Like, at least not like 9 years minimum, right? And we all know that. And so we all knew. Okay. But also, like, he still tours, like, consistently.
Yeah.
Frankie Beverly and Maze tour all the time.
And so, sells out.
And they still sell out all the time. So we knew what we were getting, and it did not lessen or change the energy or the feeling or the anything. Like, the whole friggin' stadium is like two-stepping. Like, everybody was like swaying side to side, and then, you know, everybody hit the electrics. Like it was this to watch everybody in the crowd, like, even dudes were just like just getting.
Well, the interesting thing about Frankie, let me kind of concentrate on him for a minute, is a couple things. First of all, he's never crossed over. I don't even know if these records are even top 10 black. Nope. Even on the black charts, even on the black charts, I would bet good money he's never had a number one song on the black
chart. I don't think so.
And I don't know if he, even Before I Let Go, maybe it was top 10, maybe.
Yeah.
He's never had kind of like that.
And they didn't want it. Like,
he didn't chase it. It was fine.
Yeah.
He did it like, you know, the way that he's almost, to me, he is the, well, I guess I should flip it back. The Grateful Dead is the white version of him.
Yeah, I told you like, about that.
He hits the road, and white, it's an experience.
It's an experience. And I told somebody that I was speaking at Cobalt Music Group for Black Music Month, and I was talking about how, you know, black music executives are expected to know all the white and mainstream legends. Mm-hmm. And even like the big folk artists and indie artists, we're expected to know that. But white folks don't know the same. And how I was talking to actually John's senior manager once, and I said something about Frankie Beverly, and she was like, I don't know who that is. And I was like, that's like me saying that I don't know who the Grateful Dead is.
And if you would have said that to her, she would have looked at you like you were going crack.
Crazy. And I literally said that. I said, that would literally be like me saying, I don't know who the Grateful Dead is. And you would be shocked if I said that. Now that Beyonce has remade Before I Let Go, it's possible that Frankie has come to more people's awareness. But Frankie ain't had a hit, even a moderate hit, in over 30 years.
And it's also funny that there's a lot of folks, when I was walking out of the venue, who really thought Beyonce was going to come out.
Why would you think that?
So I swear to God, I heard that conversation several times. Like, I thought we were going to be in here longer because I thought B was coming out when he did Before I Let Go. I was like,
Beyonce ain't coming out.
Yeah, she's not coming out. But the other thing about Frankie, and I guess it's like this with the Grateful Dead too. I've never been to a Grateful Dead show, but like, it's like a religious experience with black
people. It is. It's very spiritual.
It's very spiritual. Like, which is funny because he's from Philly, but what he's done with the way he wrote those records and the way they're produced and the sounds that he's using, they're Southern cultural records as you can. He even has a record called Southern Girl. Like, it's a Southern cultural records as you could possibly make. Just the sounds are like, it takes you to another space. Like, It just takes you to another space where you're like free and you're thinking about cookout and you. It just takes you to a whole different.
It's so great.
Plane, you know, like, you know what I'm saying?
He did Happy Feelings. I was in my zone. Like, I could have been at church. That's
I was in my zone when he did We Are One and Drain
Pain.
Yeah,
a lot of people were.
Pain and We Are One was like, whoa, man, damn.
And even, like, the band is so fucking tight. It just.
The drum.
Oh, my God. It's so tight. And I actually do want to go back to Pharrell and just say, that was another thing with Pharrell. You know, Pharrell has all these hits and all these hooks. But that's exactly the kind of energy you got to bring to Essence, though. Like, do the shit that people know.
Yeah.
Sing your hooks. Do your and everybody will be happy. He dropped Blurred Lines, and the whole fucking place went crazy. Cause that's
and he did. He was smart because he's a really smart guy, anyway.
Yeah.
He knew to do the nigga shit because he did not do Happy.
Right.
He did not do Happy, which is a big record. It probably could have worked, but he was like, "I'm doing the nigga shit."
But he did get lucky.
Exactly, because that was the nigga shit.
Like song, but it sounds like a, but it has like now,
chic record.
He knew exactly what to do.
Exactly what he was
doing. And that's what you got to know on that stage. Like, if you're a crossover artist, you ain't got to play your crossover shit. Yeah. Nigga, you can play your B-sides. You can play the obscure, like Kirk Franklin doing Melodies from Heaven, but doing the Crush on You remix last year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, do that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Do the shit that we're gonna know from the cookout, right. From the block party, from the Quiet Storm.
Even though Blurred Lines was a pop hit, he knew that old niggas love that shit because it sounds like Got to Give It Up.
Exactly.
So he was like, let's go, and everybody was like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, he got the whole.
Crowd. You could even see like, because I was pretty close. You could even see in his face. Like, he came out. He was good, but he worked hard as fuck. But you could see like in his face, like as the set kept going, you could see him going like, yo, this is dope. Like, niggas, like, this is dope. Like, you can kind of see his face.
He stopped at the end and was like, yo, thank you for this energy. Mm-hmm. Like, this is our DNA. You can feel, he's like, I've been feeling your energy the whole time. Like, he said that. He was like, I've been feeling your energy the whole time I've been up. And that, because that was his first Essence.
Yep, yeah. You know? Like I said, you could see his face change as, like, again, he was fine, but you could see his glow basically growing as the set kept going and it kept working. And he was kind of like, yes, my people is fucking with me. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was dope. But yeah, but back to Frankie real quick, because I think his set actually got cut a little short because he was late. He wasn't late, but everything ran late because
Teddy was on for like 2 hours.
Teddy was on forever, and then they gave Frankie a key to the city,
right?
And you know, so it was a proclamation with him and the mayor, who was getting her fucking two step. I didn't know they had a black man named LaToya.
Yeah, were you sitting next to her? I feel like I saw you talk to her on the monitor. Was that you?
No, that wasn't me. I wasn't sitting next to her. But I did catch on my Instagram. There's a part where Frankie Frankie performing. I think it's Before I Let Go or something, and she, you. I caught her on the screen two stepping. I think it was a couple of records he didn't get to do that he would have done otherwise. But
yeah, I really wanted Golden Time of Day out there.
He didn't do that. He didn't do Southern Girl. He didn't do a few records. But I just, like I said, like, it was really like a spiritual, because earlier in the night, all throughout the night, the security guards are trying to clear that middle aisle out. People kind of trying to take pictures. They always just flashing their flashlight. You gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move. When Frankie came on, they was like, whatever, nigga. Like,
whatever. Yeah.
Like you said, they were dancing.
Yeah.
Like this girl, this woman, I call it girl. She's a woman. Like, I was dancing and shit because my girl actually left Sunday. So I went to the show by myself. So this girl was dancing. I was dancing. This girl just came. We just started dancing. I didn't know that girl.
Right.
We just started dancing to Joint Pain. We danced. We got a nice little two-step on for about, you know, a good minute and a half or whatever. Yeah. And then we gave each other a little quick hug, and then she walked on her way. And it was like, you said, that's Essence, though. That's what happened.
That's Essence.
So overall, I highly recommend it. I've told several people you should really go. I definitely am going to go back.
Yeah, and this is why people book their trip and make their plan even before line. Like, nobody, like, here's the thing. Nobody really cares who's going to perform. Like, maybe you get tickets, maybe you don't. And I did hear that this year, like, a couple of nights undersold compared to last year, because some of the artists they had actually been there last year.
Yeah.
But this is why, like, because there's 500,000 people in the city, but every night, there's only like 60 to 70,000 people at the show, right?
Yeah.
But there's also, Essence also created an After Dark concert series this year, so that if you didn't want to commit to, like, not everybody can do that ticket price. Because yeah. I think like the higher tiers are like $100 and something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I mean, meaning the higher level, not the good seats.
Not the floor shit. Yeah.
Right. And that's the one thing, like, I'll give credit for, like, for the past, I don't know how many years, I haven't actually had to buy an Essence ticket in quite some time. I'm able to hustle and finagle, like, between artists and doing something for Essence proper. And this year I had press credentials, you know, like, I've been able to hustle tickets, but, and like good tickets, but not everybody can blow that wide, especially not for 3 nights straight.
Yes, it's perfect.
So this year Essence did an After Dark concert series. So, like, there was a hip-hop one. There was a ladies in hip-hop one. There was a bounce one that Frida and Manny Fresh did. There was one that was, like, the young new niggas. There was an Afrobeats one. So that if you couldn't commit to, like, that bigger ticket price, you still had options somewhere you could go, you know?
Yeah.
Go and see. And then, of course, like, there were live performances. I want to give a shout-out to the Spotify team, to Whitney, friend to the show, to Shaka, Zulu, to Jima, who is over the R&B stuff for the House of R&B, which was mad fun. It was one of my favorite parts of the weekend. Saturday night after the show, they did a jam session for Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
It was very dope. Very intimate, very chill. A lot of people ended up there, I think, at the end of the night. It was a great activation. And even Dwayne was there. So the rumors of them getting back together as the original tease might be true.
Okay.
So even Dwayne was there. And I have a cousin who lives in New Orleans, who lives in Treme. I did not call him. I don't always call him when I come to Essence because I don't always know if I'm going to have time to see him. And this nigga was playing sax for Raphael. And I was like, oh, hey, Kari. Like, and that's he's my first cousin. So it was like, he's the grandchild right behind me. So that was like a good little treat for me. But yeah, this is why people just every year they're like, I'm going, like, regardless, it's hot as hell, it's crowded as hell, it's whatever, but I'm going, because it feeds your soul.
You can't get that, if besides going to an actual family reunion, you can't get that energy.
You can't get that. It's just so, like, you can be as black as you motherfucking want to be, and also, like, Columbus is also just that city, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody, the Uber drivers be like, well, baby, you know, where you need that.
Yeah,
that,
they give you suggestions of where to eat and all this, and you know. Yeah, no, it was great. And that's the last thing we'll wrap up. I just wanted to, as far as Essence goes, I just want to give a quick shout out to the people who on the Essence staff who organize it, because
they work hard.
They work hard as hell, and they do an amazing job. There's no issues. There's no glitches that you visibly see.
Right.
I'm sure there's things that happen that they have to fix, but like, it's tight. It's well run. It's
a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
You have to accommodate 500,000 plus people
for
3 days to keep them busy and happy, and they do it. Like,
and they literally added 10 new activations this year. I also want to shout out Ashana Ayers, who manages Mary, but who also works with Essence on some of the productions and activations. And I want to shout out Miata Johnson and Masa David.
They were down there. I didn't see them.
Well, they do. They produce the Mary Brunch. They produce the East. There was a Black Global Economic Forum, and I didn't even notice until after the fact. Like, Jack from Twitter was at Essence. I didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a Global Economic Forum that Richard Lou Dennis, who owns Essence Communications now, was doing. Which, that's the thing, there were so many things happening, I didn't even know about all of them, was doing with different, like the CEO of Chase, who's a Black, like one of the CEOs of Chase, who's a Black woman. I see, like, one of the Walmart CEOs, and had a chat with Jack Dorsey, which I definitely would have been at.
Yeah, I would have. I didn't even know.
Yeah, so they help produce. They also help produce some of the activations, and they do the Strength of a Woman brunch every year. So I just want to shout them out because, like, they're my people in the game, and I love just seeing them do dope shit. Like, that, and that's the other thing is, like, there's so many people that we know who are working in some way or another during Essence Weekend, being an activation or an event, or having an artist there or whatever, that they're also from an industry component, it really does feel like a reunion.
And it does.
dope to like see your peers like just out there hustling. Like, I see you, I see you, I see you. Yeah. I'm proud of you. You doing this, you doing that, you know, like that type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I ran into Shaka like in the aisle. Teddy brought out the marching band. I just like literally just turned into him. Like, oh, what's up, nigga? I saw called Cherry from Spotify when Frankie was on walking up the aisle. Like, oh, what up, Carl? You know what I'm saying? It's like literally like that kind of thing, you know. So like,
and your section, if you were sitting in BB,
yeah, I was in BB.
So BB is where Essence. I was sitting like right to the left of that. BB is where Essence sits. All their guests. Yeah. So you see everybody coming up.
Everybody
popping, so walking back and forth. Like, I think I got on Greg's nerves last year because I kept like everybody, like every person walked by, be like, "Hey, what's up?" Mm-hmm. You know, like all of that type.
Everybody.
Of
stuff. So Ava DuVernay, so Lena Waithe, so Niecy Nash, so other people just walking up and down that aisle. Like I said, that was the section that they was in. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so yeah, man. But again, it was great. It was a great time. So we're gonna wrap it up on that. Sean had to jump. He had to run. But we're gonna wrap it up. And I'm actually going on vacation next week. I'm going to Mexico Monday. So
I'll
see if I can figure out. I'm bringing my laptop, so maybe I can squeeze 90 minutes here from the beach or from the pool. All
right.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.